Welcome to Healthcare Du Jour, where we dish up and digest the latest in healthcare. For the next 30 minutes, sit back as we bring you insight, commentary, and discussion on trending topics to the table, all expertly served up by our host and his guests. Healthcare Du Jour is brought to you by Carium, the telehealth platform enabling healthcare's digital transformation, helping you care for people within the fabric of their daily lives. Now here's your host, Matt Fisher.
Welcome back, and thank you for joining as we dive into the hottest topics in healthcare. I'm your host, Matt Fisher. On the menu today is David Vivero, co-founder and CEO at Amino. David, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Matt. I appreciate it.
So, David, what I always like to do before getting into the main part of the conversation is to give my guests an opportunity to provide a little bit more of a background in terms of who they are and what they do. So the floor is yours.
Thanks, Matt. Co-founder and CEO of Amino. At Amino, we guide people to the highest quality, lowest cost healthcare. My personal background actually bridges both healthcare and consumer internet businesses. I spent about half my career in digital solutions, really a marketplace businesses like Zillow. I ran the rentals business at Zillow for a little while after they acquired my last internet company. And then the other half in healthcare. And what unifies my experience is just building digital first experiences that really anchor in convenience and in transparency to help people make choices about these big, expensive, complicated purchases like buying a home or now, you know, buying a surgery or making use of the health benefit plan. And Amino, as a company, partners with purchasers like employers, labor unions, payers, TPAs, and so forth to deliver that experience to their members. Because if members make good choices and leverage the high-performing providers that are in their network today, then the members themselves end up with a much better healthcare experience. They're back to work. They're feeling good. They're not feeling like their wallet got stolen by a provider. And the self-insured plan or the health issuer feels like they can actually get more bang for their buck. They're going to actually be able to be more profitable, spend less on benefits or spend less on claims. So that's what we do at Amino.
Yeah, and pricing is certainly a major issue within healthcare at the moment. And before we kind of really get into that, I'm just curious, you know, given what it sounded like a transition from, kind of real estate or, focused work into healthcare, what brought you into the healthcare industry?
Every company in America is a healthcare company in that, you know, we sponsor these health insurance plans for our employees. And so I was leaving one company, Zillow, with every intention of starting another company. And it just hit me like a ton of bricks when I got my one pager about COBRA, which was my first experience as someone on my own in healthcare. And I was ostensibly a healthy 28, 29 year old. I had a pre-existing condition, which at the time meant that I couldn't just get one of the plans on the individual market. This was 2013. And so I went through this tour of the challenges of finding a plan, then having to choose a narrow network, and then having to pick a new provider. And it's just one of those experiences where I had been primed, you know, building businesses and products that make complicated decisions pretty easy and pretty transparent. And then having one foot also in this healthcare experience. So it just became clear to me what company I would start next. And the next, you know, several years became a journey in building something remarkable, recruiting a team, you know, raising now, you know, tens of millions of dollars in capital, and now building an audience of millions to support this. But that was really the spark, was kind of one foot in consumer grade technology and transparency and convenience, and then another foot being on my own in healthcare. And so Amino was my promise to marry those two.
So kind of tapping into what you just mentioned about, you know, that background of a lot of transparency around price and, you know, seeing, you know, how people would be searching around for price, just thinking about, I know in my own past using Zillow when I would go through housing searches, how did that influence your approach and I suspect research into the, you know, let's call it less than clear world of pricing in healthcare?
Well, I think the key thing for any entrepreneur to consider is, and really any project manager or any innovator, is to ask ourselves, you know, how much of what we see in the rearview mirror from established patterns is transferable and is reliable and is likely to be true in the future? And how much of it is not transferable? And in my case, it's how much of, you know, healthcare purchasing really can be learned from what we've done with travel or real estate or automotive and other, you know, somewhat substantial purchases. The reality is they're not one-to-one. There's some things that are very different about healthcare, but they do overlap a fair bit. You know, these are infrequent, complex decisions. They involve both kind of a right brain and a left brain, you know, so it's a little bit about the data, but also a little bit about the state of mind that someone's in. And so products have to be really grounded in compassion, which is one of our values as a company at Amino. But what makes healthcare pretty unique versus every other market is that none of us actually pays the same price. And that's not just because of, you know, all this price variation that, you know, historically has been unavailable to us. It's also because each of us has a different passport to the U.S. healthcare system. We have a different network. We have different digital benefits. Like, you may have a telemedicine vendor that's different than mine. You may have an expert opinion service or a diabetes program that you have access to. You may have a clinic, or the way that your primary care is compensated for you may be different than for me. And so certain things may be included for you that they're not for me. So all of this kind of access diversity in healthcare makes the problem of healthcare so substantially different than real estate, which is really just about, can you, do you want to live in that place and can you afford it, right? I mean, theoretically, you know, all of us, you know, could live anywhere we want, especially post-pandemic, given that, you know, so many people are working from home. And it's just about, you know, can you afford it and is it the right place for you? Well, in healthcare, every single person has their own lens, or what I call their own passport. And so what we've had to do as a company is marry both kind of a unified vision of what does it mean to get value? Where's the safest, most experienced, most appropriate providers of care, and how expensive are they? But also run that through the filter of every user saying, hey, is that person in my network? Is that person also part of my benefits? Do I have an alternative to this brick and mortar provider? So it can be informed from those previous experiences, but it's actually fascinatingly different.
You know, I really like your description of the diversity of access points. And, you know, the ready kind of recognition that you just described of realizing that you can't really make that one-to-one comparison, as you said, to other kind of more general consumer areas. And it often feels like the discussion around, you know, price transparency and, you know, just kind of individual behavior in healthcare tries to gloss past that and just saying, why can't we make it more of a consumer style experience?
Yeah. Well, I'm actually fully in agreement that it could be a consumer style experience. I just think the definitions have to be tailored to healthcare in some ways. For example, in healthcare, I am almost always making a first time purchase. These are not purchases where I'm going to have any sort of practiced, you know, experience or judgment that comes from just repeated efforts. If I buy a brand of coffee, for me, I will have sampled so many coffees and I know what brands I like. Or if I buy a bottle of wine, I know that I like a big red wine, or I like a light red wine, or like, you know, a rosé or whatever. All of those are things that pretty inexpensively you can sample. In healthcare, I'm just going to get one knee replacement. It's that one purchase I'm going to make. And so it's really impossible to come up the learning curve. But in addition to that, which I think is really powerful, is that every single one of these purchases that I make in healthcare are ones that I don't get excited about. So even if it's my one chance, it's my one knee replacement I'm going to pick, what I really prefer to do as a human being is to be handed an answer, is to be told, who do I go see? Whose opinion can I trust? Because the reality is, inside of real estate or travel, oh, that research is fun. I mean, I get to look at photos of backyards and walk a street view through a neighborhood, and I get to look at the photos of the beach for that resort that I'm thinking about for my honeymoon. Those are all things where you want the user to engage substantially, and the user themselves wants to engage intensely. But in healthcare, one of the things we optimize for in Amino is, how do you make it so that it's in and out, so that someone can make an expert judgment about where to get a significant healthcare service, running all the analytics on cost and quality and access and so forth, but do it in a way so that the member themselves can go focus on what they really want to do, which is be with their kids, or take care of that last set of emails from work, or you know, do whatever they'd like to do so that they're not thinking about their back pain. And so it's a really, I think some of those are really substantial, important differences that obviously make their way into great products like Amino.
No, and I think that's a great point, because as you said, it's, you know, a lot of, you know, for the probably for the average person, when you're going to access a healthcare service, kind of as you said, it's going to be most likely the first time and probably most likely the only time you're going about making that particular type of choice, especially if it's for something other than, like a routine physical or, other one of the kind of standard preventative type visits that, most of us have gotten used to. So I think your description of, trying to, it sounds like overcome an engagement barrier because, as you said, it's, it is a lot of fun to try and, piece together a trip or do, well, fun doesn't always factor into the house hunting process. It's still, you're actively looking at all the pictures and trying to figure out, okay, do I want to live here? But, as you said, healthcare is different because it's, it can be hard to figure out what's the best quality and, certainly pricing is another thing that, even if you can find quality piece, it has traditionally been very difficult to figure out pricing.
It has been. And a lot of it makes sense and a lot of it doesn't. And by that, I mean, it makes sense that it's been difficult to find pricing because we've made it so darn complicated. To some extent, we have created an almost untamable beast in the form of administrative and contractual complexity inside of the supply chain of healthcare. And that's why, to some extent, even folks who've wanted to do this over many years just didn't have the wherewithal. They didn't have access to the complexities of the data to do so. And so I think that's understandable in that way. It's also understandable that good people are responding to really bad incentives. If you think about the way that the medical loss ratio has really made profitability linked principally to growing premiums and growing market share, as opposed to finding cheaper ways to deliver care inside of, so many health plans, or the fact that there's this real agency gap, right, between the folks who are negotiating these networks as ASO partners to traditional kind of self-insured employers. The folks who are purchasing the care don't really have the same incentives as the folks who are administering these networks. And so you have all of this cross-subsidization that's happening across these contracts. And so, you've created both this complexity that makes the challenge almost insurmountable. And you combine that with a bunch of bad incentives that make even good people make the wrong choice, in my view, as it relates to the consumer. And so, some of these recent regulations do a lot of great work to try and address those, to try and push the technologies into the future and also address some of the underlying incentive problems that have also made healthcare lack transparency. But one of the things I will say is that, this problem of wanting transparency and not getting what we need out of it has I think, colored people's expectations that if we had a transparent marketplace, would it make a difference? I believe so. I've got a whole point of view on that. I happen to think that a lot of the first generation of products in this area just didn't deliver on consumer expectations. But that point you're making, though, about how difficult it's been, I think there's a lot of structural barriers that I think regulatory shifts have begun to address, which is very exciting.
And are you able to speak to some of the particular kind of regulatory shifts that you're referencing? Because I suspect I have a pretty good guess, but would be interested to just hear your perspective of which ones have been catching your eye the most.
Yeah, well, this stuff evolves, and a lot of this, the states being the lab, right, of innovation. Massachusetts and other states have historically been trying to build more transparency into their state regulated insurers. And most recently that made its way into the federal government. And so the two big regulations, exist both as legislation. The Consolidated Appropriations Act late last year had a provision in it that many insurers are very familiar with these days called the No Surprises Act baked into it, which really makes a very strong case for addressing a lot of the incentives. So eliminating gag clauses in these provider contracts, as well as creating responsibility for insurers as it relates to surprise out-of-network billing from air ambulances, from out-of-network anesthesiologists. These have been the landmines of the U.S. healthcare industry for quite a while, and the victims have mostly been consumers who've been balanced billed. So the Consolidated Appropriations Act, with the No Surprises Act baked into it, has really addressed this idea of shoppability and transparency, but also changing some of the incentives in the rules by outlawing these gag clauses and by ensuring that people have access to claims data and also consumers have access to a price shopping tool. That goes into effect January 1st, 2022. That's right around the corner. So you have a lot of insurers that are really trying to figure out how they solve this problem. We're working with some of them to make sure that they're future-proof and able to satisfy this new consumer frontier. The second regulation really gets confused by a lot of people. You know, HHS last year issued two different regulations about transparency. One was the hospital price transparency regulation, which, you know, that actually went live first of this year, 2021, and it's had inconsistent compliance. A lot of reasons for that. The one that we're focused on is called this transparency in coverage rule. So the transparency in coverage rule really says that every insurer, in fact, every self-insured plan, meaning every labor union, every employer that's self-insured, all those folks that are providing and sponsoring health plan benefits, they have to provide not only digital files of prices for the negotiated rates, they also have to provide a shoppable tool for hundreds of services by law. And what's fascinating about it is that there's real teeth in that law. So not complying is going to be pretty significant penalties for those folks. And I think it's getting people to turn their heads and look at transparency as both an urgent need and potentially an opportunity.
And for those of you just joining, I'm talking about David Vivero from Amino. And we've been talking about, you know, incentives within healthcare and complexity, and now kind of turning to some of the newer regulatory developments. And, you know, kind of, David, one of the things that you were saying of, you know, feeling that earlier efforts didn't necessarily provide firm enough footing for real change, and that you're kind of bullish on the opportunities that are now being presented. You know, it would be very interested to hear kind of, you know, why, you know, you feel that, or why you're seeing the opportunity for these new regulations to really provide a good basis to, you know, kind of fundamentally change behaviors.
Well, I think that the there's a few things. One is the teeth of these regulations. Non-compliance with the transparency and coverage rule, you know, has enforcement mechanisms both through both the IRS and Treasury, as well as the Department of Health and Human Services. There's, you know, some pretty significant excise penalties, you know, per member per day penalties that are going to be motivating to people who sponsor health plan benefits. So there's already this the teeth baked into the laws themselves. And then the laws and the regulations also do away with some things that were kind of counter incentives. So for example, these gag clauses that have historically been in provider and payer contracts, a lot of that's been used as a rationale, you know, for not letting data flow where it needs to flow to provide transparency. Oh gosh, you know, we can't give you our network because we don't want you to do any sort of steerage within the network toward these safer, more appropriate providers of care. Because, you know, we promised in our contracts that we wouldn't differentiate between high quality and low quality surgeons. Well, you know, Congress really thinks that that's not a good idea for the American consumer, that a provider of services would knowingly allow someone to choose a provider that that they know is unsafe. You know, eliminating gag clauses, another thing that changes the incentives. You know, one of the things that's fascinating about the transparency and coverage rule is that the medical loss ratio, which really governs the amount of money that has to be spent out of every premium dollar on care, it's made the argument that, you know what, if insurers and health plan sponsors aren't innovative in sharing savings with members and saying, hey, gosh, you know, if you just went left instead of right here, and you went and got this surgery here instead of there, you know, you'd be saving the plan about $4,000. And so here, I'll give you some of that back in shared savings, which can be pretty meaningful for people. Historically, that didn't do anything for an insurer because their profitability was set by this big structure, the medical loss ratio. Now that can actually create profitability for plans. So instead of becoming more of a profitable endeavor by just increasing health spending and marking that up by 20%, you can now create profitability as a venture by reducing the amount of healthcare spend and by getting people to hospitals that are not going to readmit them and so forth. So, you know, it's both carrots and sticks have been addressed in a lot of really fascinating ways. And I think that's motivating different behaviors on part of the healthcare supply chain.
Yeah, no, I'm actually kind of fascinated by you pointing to the medical loss ratio, because it's actually come up recently in a number of different discussions that I've had with folks where it kind of, as you said, it's, you know, one of those perverse incentives where by having that kind of requirement, there was no real drive for the insurance companies to reduce the spend because they had to spend a certain amount, or it was just going back without having any connection to quality or improvement of outcomes. So it's, you know, I think you're pointing to that as one of the elements that creates some optimism. It certainly seems to be kind of resonating based on a number of the conversations I've been having recently.
Yeah, it's amazing how much attention this is getting, and you see it in, you know, there's some great surveys done by just employers in the end of the first quarter that showed that nearly 90% of employers are taking action on hospital price and quality transparency instead of their own plan designs. And a majority, according to Aon, 55%, I think, of employers over 5,000 employees are actually putting in new solutions that actively guide members toward higher value corners of the network that they have access to. And you see it flowing its way all the way into those plan designs. So I think people are just taking a more active role in the utilization side, not plan design, not, you know, just trying to provide higher quality clinical benefits, but truly, like, how do we guide specific utilization decisions, provider selection decisions, and use that as a lever to reduce this monstrous healthcare spend we have in this country?
Yeah, and that also seems to go to, you know, kind of some of the other points that you were emphasizing around, you know, the impact of the new laws and regulations are in terms of, you know, like the gag clauses and other contractual provisions that, you know, previously would have promoted, you know, keeping things in the dark and, you know, in some cases outright preventing the sharing of information. You know, it sounds like what you're saying is now starting to come out is you're starting to get contractual provisions going essentially in the completely different direction of kind of mandating and enhancing the access to this information, which, you know, if I'm understanding correctly, is you're saying will also kind of help with the drive towards making more informed decisions and, you know, being able to identify, hey, maybe this higher quality provider over here is actually lower cost and everyone's going to make out better by going in that direction.
Yeah, we're on this frontier, Matt. I'm actually not quite sure where it's going to go. And that's exciting. You know, the levers of plan design, network design, these digital tools, and then all the innovations that you could never predict once data gets liberated, I think are going to have profound impact on the total cost of care on health plan sponsors, frankly, whose business it is not to provide healthcare. Like these self-insured employers, just they want to sell shoes, they want to sell books, they want to sell technology. They want to feel like they're buying a best-in-class service from the healthcare industry, and they just don't know how to optimize it. So if they can figure out ways to do that, I think they're going to be able to unlock lots of new productivity in the U.S. healthcare, the U.S. economy. We just not existed in a world in which transparency has had to exist. So I'll give you one possible secondary or tertiary effect of this transparency. You know, if we believe that the prices are going to become transparent, and that we have to publish these according to law, maybe we'll just do away with these complex contracts, right? It's just, you know, if you know that you have to end up, you know, summarizing it in some way anyway, you know, maybe we will eliminate some of that complexity. I think it's going to have a big impact on, for example, maybe collections and the revenue cycle industry. You know, it's going to have an impact on how health systems innovate and differentiate themselves, because they're going to have to focus on earning that incremental price premium. So if you are 15% more, well, you know, what are you doing differently to earn it in terms of safety and the quality of outcomes and so forth? So it's just fascinating to see how you just change one dimension and everything else needs to kind of recalibrate.
And kind of thinking about that recalibration, how do you see individuals taking advantage of the, you know, kind of these new changes? Because, you know, I think a lot of what we've been talking about is probably more on the business to business level. But I'm, you know, interested to get your thoughts in terms of how you think individual person-to-person behavior might get influenced.
Well, I do think individual person-to-person behavior is going to be more effective in the U.S. healthcare industry, meaning that the information will flow into scenarios where someone's going to make a better decision than they otherwise would have made if they didn't have the information. How they do that, I have a hunch, is not going to be by canvassing digital files or researching tons and tons of options for their surgery or MRI. Reality is, I think that this information will still end up becoming summarized and used to guide specific decisions, help people find kind of, you know, the one or two providers they really should go to, given their unique, you know, passport to care, and they'll go to those providers. And I think that's the thing, is that, you know, just because we are liberating data does not mean that humans want to pour over all of it, that all of a sudden we want to create a Zillow for American healthcare, because the reality is this is just not fun stuff. if I am sick or injured, I just want to get back to work or get back to my kids. So given that, you know, our big philosophy at Amino is being compassionate with users, but also focusing on their convenience and focusing on letting them get the right outcome without having to engage, you know, all that much. So I have profound confidence that this is going to drive down the cost of care and improve the market share, frankly, of providers that deliver better results for the dollar. I think as it relates to consumers, is they're still going to rely on third parties to help them just simplify their decision because they're already going through so much. I mean, someone with a spouse who's got a cancer diagnosis is just the last thing they want to do is learn the differences in, you know, the fee-for-service rates of hospitals. But this information will be brought into those folks who influence her choice or his choice. And that's really powerful.
Yeah, and I think that sounds like a very fair prediction. David, believe it or not, we're already almost out of time. So I want to ask you kind of one final question, which is, what do you think one unexpected outcome might be from kind of the new laws and regulations that we've just been focusing on?
I think an unexpected outcome of these new laws and regulations is going to be the innovation in plan design and in the realized impact of value-based choices in healthcare. We thought for 15 years that if we just put, you know, people's skin in the game by raising their deductibles, they would naturally canvass for this information and become empowered and make decisions that were higher value. Those were the only levers we have. But now with how you can use transparency to create shared savings, so how payers are responsible for preventing out-of-network surprise spending, all of that stuff I think is going to drive new pricing models, new reimbursements and different plan structures, things that I think are going to be far greater downstream. And like I said earlier, I think another thing is that I think you're going to see greater simplification, just simplicity in the provider contracting world, many more bundles, many more sort of single rates, lots of stuff that sort of takes transparency and incorporates into how they negotiate the rates up front, you know, how they negotiate the rates in the first place. So my hope is that the complexity of delivering transparency will go down over time because it will be an expected outlet.
Yeah, no, and I think that'll be a lot to be on the lookout for. But as I said, believe it or not, we are out of time. I want to thank my guest, David Vivero, for a great conversation today.
Thanks so much, Matt. I really appreciate it.
And thank you to everyone listening. Keep the dialogue going and connect with me at #HCDEJURE. I'm Matt Fisher. Until next time.